Welcome to Fate's Wide Wheel, a Quantum Leap podcast with Sam and Dennis. We are coming to you from our top secret headquarters at Project Quantum Leap, but you can find us online at fwwquantumleappod.com or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Fate's Wide Wheel. And please do us a favor by hitting the subscribe button on iTunes.
All right. Hello, everybody.
Hello. Welcome to Fate's Wide Wheel, Quantum Leap podcast with Sam and Dennis. We are indeed recording remotely.
We are. This week. Yes.
At least Dennis is. Dennis is more remote than usual.
Yes.
I'm here nestled safely into the basement of Project Quantum Leap. And we're here tonight, today, whenever you happen to be listening, to talk about Unchained.
Unchained, yeah. It's been a while since we talked about an episode proper. It's been a few weeks.
It has, yeah. Last one would have been Single Drop of Rain, which is like a month ago. So
yeah. So before we do that, we were talking about before we hit record, we've been engaging more on social media, asking people just about Quantum Leap in general because of the 30th anniversary last week. And so I threw out the question this week, what was the first episode of Quantum Leap you saw? So just reading off some responses here. A lot of people said that they watched it from the first one, either when it were originally aired on NBC or through reruns in some way, USA or BBC or otherwise. Reading off some other ones here. There is one, I can't read it right now, but I was surprised to say to read that the person had actually discovered Scott Bakula through Enterprise.
Yeah.
And then jumped, I think it was Cheryl Minns who said that, and then she jumped back and then picked up the rest of the Scott Bakula canon, and that's how she picked up Quantum Leap. But a lot of people, first episode, Color of Truth is a really popular one. Adam Walton said Another Mother. Someone else said Pull Hall Blues. That was my first episode. Go ahead.
Didn't Larry say that Good Morning Peoria had been his first? Yeah.
Yeah. Saw it in
Not a bad first episode to come in on.
Yeah, honestly. Saw it at Disney World. That was like, because there were two summers where NBC did a week where they showed an episode of Quantum Leap every night during the week, trying to get interest generated because it always struggled in the ratings.
Right.
But yeah. So yeah,
quality television program struggling in the ratings. I don't
believe. Oh, yes, yeah. And speaking of Scott Bakula Enterprise, I now since I'm all caught up on Discovery and the Orville, I'm also my eternal struggle to get into Enterprise.
I'll tell you what. The interesting thing to me about Enterprise, I know we've talked about this a little bit before. I'll make this a quick digression. Is that I feel like the good episodes of Enterprise I would put up against just about any other iteration of Trek. Mm-hmm. But man, when it was bad, it was worse than Voyager bad. I mean,
It was funny because I put out one last tangent here. As I threw out on Twitter this morning on my personal account, I was like, what's a TV series that you eventually lost patience for and you quit watching, but then you came back and you watched the finale? And one person responded, Voyager and Enterprise.
Okay.
And that's true. I've seen the last episode of Enterprise, as bad as it is. When I watched Voyager for the first time coming up on 3 years ago or a little over 2 years ago. And eventually when it got to the last two seasons, I went online and I Googled like, what are like the essential episodes in the last two seasons you have to see. And I watched the essential episodes and then I jumped to the finale just because after a while, like I just,
I completely agree with you, and it's too bad because I feel like of a lot of the premises out there. I mean, one of the things that was so cool about Deep Space Nine is that they were stationary for a good portion of the series, so they had to invent kind of new ways to tell stories and focus on the characters more. And I think that really strengthened that show, and still to this day puts it above a lot of the other Treks, in my opinion. But Voyager has this awesome premise. They're stuck out in the middle of nowhere. They got no way back. And it didn't matter because they hit the great Star Trek reset button at the end of every episode. Mm-hmm. And so nothing really mattered.
Yeah.
It's like one episode they could be running low on fuel. The next episode didn't matter. They'd gone 50 light years,
So it's like, yeah.
all right, well, fine. Nothing really matters, and why should I care?
Yeah.
I dug the finale. It was all right. Sure. But anyway.
All right, anyway. Let's dive into this week's episode, Unchained or Unchained Melody.
We'll
get into that. November 2nd, 1956. You got the book this week. I'm recording at my massage office. I'm a massage therapist. That sounds weird. I'm recording at my massage office, and I forgot Matt's book. I need to get the electronic version, which, by the way, an electronic version of Beyond the Mirror Image by Matt Dale is now available.
And that's right.
We'll put a thing in the show notes or on Facebook this week and remind people.
Yeah, I'd like to have the electronic version myself, mainly because
it'll keep you from straining your wrist.
Well, not only that, but honestly, the hardcover, it feels like something about it just feels kind of special. Not to sound silly or whatever. So I would love to be able to just put this on a bookshelf and let it kind of just sit there and look good and not get all dog-eared or torn up or anything, which I'm sure. If you looked at my old Quantum Leap encyclopedia from back in the day, the A to Z, there are some pages about ready to fall out of that.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, Unchained. It was directed by Michael Watkins. This is his fourth of six episodes, including Last Dance, Hurricane, and the upcoming Killing Time. Written by Paris Qualls. This is one of two episodes. It was written by Paris. The next episode would be Ghost Ship. Also interesting to note, I thought, is that Paris adapted the script, the stage play, Raisin in the Sun. He adapted the version that starred Puff Daddy. So take that for whatever you want.
Interesting. Okay.
Actually, I haven't seen that version. For all I know, it could be very, very good. It's just I can't get over the fact that P. Diddy's in it.
Yeah.
The episode aired one other thing to mention about Paris Qualls. He also wrote two episodes of China Beach, which is a show we talk about frequently.
Okay. That is your forthcoming podcast on the Fates Wide Wheel.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Air date was November 27th, 1991. Our leap date is November 2nd, 1956. So this is a fairly early leap. Our leapy is Chance Cole. We're in Tallaga County. It's interesting because I think somewhere in the episode they say Alabama. At least that's what's listed on a lot of the websites. But that can't be possible because it doesn't share a border with Louisiana. So it's either got to be Mississippi or Texas.
Sure.
Sure. Whatever.
It's in the deep south.
Yeah, it's a southern city.
Yeah, if it's in the latter two seasons of Quantum Leap and you guess Deep South, there's a 50% chance you're going to be right.
Man, that's interesting. Yeah. I'd never thought of that before.
Yeah.
So because Dennis doesn't have the book, I get a special honor.
You get the treat.
I get to talk even more than I normally do and read the TV guide description, which is, Sam is a fugitive on a chain gang along with a prisoner, Basil Wallace, who's innocent of the robbery for which he's doing time. That may be the most straightforward TV guide description we've ever had. I didn't even get a good pun. What the hell?
That's a straight one. So while we're here, this is something I also posted online this afternoon. I don't know if you've been online, if you had a chance to see this. Right now, I am currently rewatching Quantum Leap through Amazon Prime through IMDb free dive channel.
Yeah.
It comes with commercials, but hey, that's cool. That's awesome. So this is the guide description from online, from Amazon Prime. Sam, Scott Bakula, becomes a member of a 1956 chain gang where he is shackled to an innocent American Indian, Basil Wallace, who is determined to escape. And by the way, this episode is called Unchained Melody, not simply Unchained. So I posted on Facebook, I said, what's wrong with this episode description? And I thought there were two answers. And there's one and a half answers.
Right.
Unchained,
yes.
Unchained Melody. That's the wrong one. But I had forgotten until I rewatched this episode. It's a detail blink and you miss it. You might miss it in the first episode. But Jasper does say in the first lines that he is part Native American.
Yeah, his mother was Muscogee.
Yeah, and, so that's not entirely wrong.
Well, and it's interesting because it does have, I think, a larger part to play in his character overall because, you know, his grandmother raised him on the reservation, and she's the one that tells him that he belongs in wide open spaces, and of course he's got the horrible claustrophobia and such. So it is a very small detail, a little bit of subtlety and nuance in there, I guess, but it does play a part just into his overall character, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. One other thing that I get to do this week, since Dennis doesn't have the book handy, is the Also Known As. Obviously, we just... I know, I'm sorry,
I will never forget the book again.
So, obviously, we just touched on Unchained Melody, which apparently, according to Matt's book, it was first called that in the Quantum Leap book, which was a larger, eight by 12-ish... large format magazine kind of type book. Mm-hmm. They did two versions of it. One, I believe, only went up to the end of the third season or something like that, and then the other one did the whole show. You might be able to find a copy of it in Half Price Books. I've got a copy. I honestly can't remember if it's the first one or the second one. Mm-hmm. And there's some cool stuff in there. Most notably, I think some of the behind the scenes, like sketches and drawings. Production designs. But anyway, the book apparently was one of the first ones to title it Unchained Melody, which is weird. Who knows why? Germany, Der Zweikampf, The Duel. I'm not going to try and say the French one. But Life Hangs by a Chain is what it was called in France.
Ooh, that's artsy.
And here we go. Italy might win. Free with an exclamation point at the end.
I love it.
Yeah. So there you have it. There are our alternate titles, also known as. So let's just jump right in. I think it's worth noting, first of all, that Dennis and I probably have differing views as to the quality of this particular episode. We'll see as we proceed how that holds up.
Sure.
So we start off. And, you know, the leap in really sets things up wonderfully with the chain gang escape with Jasper and Sam as Cole leaping off the truck to try and make their break for freedom. Mm-hmm. When we come back after the credits have rolled, they are they're on the run.
Yeah.
And Sam clearly is thrown for a bigger loop. I think than normally.
Yeah.
Like the physical toll that this is taking on him.
It is worth noting kind of the punchline of the intro. As soon as they jump off the truck, Jasper is asking him which way to go. And that's the twist, is that Sam is supposed to know what they're doing now that they are in this high stakes do or die situation.
Yeah, and Jasper thinks that he's lied to him because, you know, he told him that he'd grown up around there, that sort of thing.
Sure, yeah.
Which we never really figure out if any of that's true or not.
We don't get any of Chance Cole's story whatsoever.
Yeah.
We haven't seen a Cole this sketchy since maybe Baby.
Yes, indeed. That's nice. That was a deep dive.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
I dig it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. We learn a little bit about what got him on the chain gang, and we know that they have kept him longer than he was supposed to be there. But other than that, that's really all that we ever learn about him. We get one nice mirror image shot of him at one point. But that's about it. It's interesting because it's a very Sam heavy episode in so much as he doesn't pretend to be this other guy at all.
I mean, he has no context of how he's supposed to, to be. I hadn't really thought. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that. But there's no,
But even with Jasper, there's really no pretending. Like once they get taken back, at that point he's pretty much just saying, you know, he doesn't tell the guy that he's from the future, but he tells him about Al. Pretty much, he lets him know. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's interesting because it feels almost like we're watching Sam throughout the course of this episode, not Sam trying to be someone else or trying to fit in or try to play a part.
Yeah, that is a great point. And I will say, so we kind of talked before we started recording, you have a much higher opinion of this episode than I do.
I do.
What I like about this episode is in the first 15 minutes.
I could totally see that, yes.
It's them being on the run. It's Sam trying to figure out the story. Al has a lot of great one-liners in this episode. Yeah. In particular, the first half of the episode. And so I liked just the banter of when Al shows up for the first time and they have the cracks back and forth about, oh, looks like, you know, you're dressed up for hard times. And Sam makes a joke like, this is the latest in prison wear. Blah, blah, blah. And as he's leaving, the first time Al says, if I wasn't a hologram, I could swear I could smell skunk. Al's outfit, the red jacket and the red pants, is like, when I think of Al's outfits on the show, like that is like the perfect outfit.
One of the top. Yeah. One of the top ones.
If I were to reach out to John Pierre and say, hey, do you still have this outfit available? That would be one I would reach out.
I would argue through the whole episode. Like, he you know, even that orange jacket that he wears is very Al. And then at the end, where he's got, like, the purple jacket and shirt and everything. Like, I think that this, you know, everything. But I agree with you. The red outfit in particular stands out. But even through the course of the whole episode, all three costumes that he has work really well for him.
Definitely spot on.
One of the things that I'll just piggyback onto what you're saying, because I agree with everything that you just said. Those first 15 minutes, certainly, they move in a different way than the rest of the episode does. No pun intended, because obviously they're on the run. There is a little bit more levity injected into the script through those first, you know, 15 minutes or so. Because once they come back, and once, you know, Jasper gets thrown in the hole again, things get pretty heavy and pretty dark and stay that way for most of the rest of the episode. There's the one kind of I want to call it the Of Mice and Men moment, where you know, then when they're in the cabin and they're talking about how they're going to get a place of their own.
And
Lenny's like, can we have rabbits and all that sort of stuff. Just because there's this moment where Jasper's telling Sam, you know, what he wants, what he expects, where he's going to go afterwards. And that injects some hope and a little bit more brightness into the episode. But other than that, the last two thirds of this episode are pretty heavy and pretty dark. And desperate. That's the word that I would use to describe the bulk of this episode, is desperate. Mm-hmm. There's a desperation about the actions that all of these characters take. Maybe with the exception of Sam, but even then, to a degree, I mean, Sam, I think, gets pretty damn desperate.
Sure, too. Yeah.
And it's interesting because there's a lot of action without thought, I feel like, in this episode. You know, characters just acting on their impulses as opposed to, you know, taking a step back and thinking, like, maybe I shouldn't hit the guy with the gun.
Yes. Yes. There's a lot of that. And the one thing I'd say, jumping back to Al's outfits, this is one thing that does strike me weirdest about the outfits, is that Al leaves at the beginning of the episode. He's wearing the red outfit. Mm-hmm. He comes back a few minutes later, and he's in a completely different outfit. And they typically do a pretty good job of keeping the outfits consistent. Like, if he's gone for a few minutes, he comes back in the same outfit. Yeah. If he's gone for a day, he comes back in a different outfit. So it did jump out at me that it's just a few minutes later and Al has switched outfits. They're great outfits.
Yeah.
That just jumped out at me.
It does make you wonder. No, that's interesting. You know, one other thing about Al that I wanted to throw out there, he calls Ziggy him at one point in this episode. Mm. Which is interesting because we're at a point in the canon of Quantum Leap, if you will, where that very rarely happens, because at this point we've seen for a fact that Ziggy is a she. Mm-hmm. But I noticed it because a peek behind the curtain here at Project Quantum Leap. Dennis and I had to rewatch the episode mostly because when we initially watched it like 2 weeks ago to record, we had to postpone. So we wanted to be a little fresher. So upon rewatch, I noticed that at one point Al calls Ziggy a him. Which is interesting. Another thing that this episode does, I know we're kind of all over the place, but I think it's fine for this particular episode, is that we get another great example, well, not so great for one person involved, of Sam's effect on the time stream, if you will, because if he had never pointed the finger at the actual robber, that robber would have committed four more robberies and not been shot and killed.
Sure.
But because of Sam's actions through the course of this episode, he gets murdered, and those other four robberies don't happen,
sure.
which is something that Al even tells Sam, you know, there were supposed to be four more robberies, and they don't, you know, they don't shine too much of a light on it and say, like, this is because of what you did or whatever. But I do find it interesting, you know, that, that because Boss Cooley,
sure.
kills Jake, that we, that those robberies don't happen.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And so we're seeing Sam's effect on things right then and there.
Yeah.
Which the reason why I bring that up is because there's always the notion of, are the things that Sam does affecting Project Quantum Leap in any way? And is one of those things that's being affected the gender, if you will, of Ziggy?
Mm.
That's all crazy.
Yeah. We love Fan Wake here at Baseball as well. So before I have some thoughts about everything you just said about, like, the time stream and how time works in this episode. Should we do the IMDb bits?
Let's do it, man. Let's do it. Who you got?
Let's start off with Basil Wallace, plays Jasper Boone. Still alive, first and foremost.
Yes, indeed.
Other things, he gets at least one of our Star Trek shout-outs of the episode.
That's
he was
right.
Klingon Guard 1 in a 1990 episode of Star Trek. Which one?
Reunion.
Reunion. Yeah. Awesome. And then my internet's being a little bit slow here, so if I'm behind the thing.
No worries. I took some notes, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
One of the things that I had to point out, because during my misspent youth, almost embarrassed to admit this today, but, you know, what the hell. When I was a kid, I loved, like, you know, action / martial arts movies, and Steven Seagal was pretty big back in the day. I don't know if you know this or not, kids, but there was a time when Steven Seagal was kind of cool. Hard to imagine now. But there was a movie that he did called Marked for Death, and Basil Wallace, actually, it was one of his first big roles, played the villain in Marked for Death, a role called Screwface. The interesting thing about that is that it's so completely different from Jasper Boone. He's this dreadlocked, you know, Rastafarian, sword-wielding drug dealer who, you know, ends up getting his head cut off in the climax of the film. But, spoilers, sorry. But it just fascinated me because I never in a million years would have put that together if it wasn't for IMDb. And when I read it, I kind of did a double take. I was like, that can't be right. But I thought that was interesting. So shout out for Marked for Death. He also did an episode of China Beach, and West Wing, is working, let's see, most recently in NCIS Los Angeles.
Mm, okay.
That was in 2012. Not quite sure what he's up to now, but clearly has quite a few cool credits under his belt.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah.
So that would be Basil Wallace, who plays Jasper.
For sure. J.C. Quinn gets our first no longer with us shout out of the episode. Passed away at the age of 63 in 2004. J.C. Quinn. He plays Boss Cooley.
Yes, indeed. He was in a film of, that I'm a fan of called Barfly with Mickey Rourke. Mickey Rourke plays sort of a heightened, fictionalized version of Charles Bukowski, and J.C. Quinn played a character called Jim in that. A really long list of credits, you know, packed a hell of a lot in, it feels like, in that unfortunately shortened career. Got some recurring roles on television series, some guest spots on stuff like Cheers, oh, that's where I recognized him. He was in Days of Thunder. Man, I tell you what, I misspent you. He was also in The Abyss, Turner and Hooch. He had a lengthy role as Red Griswold in First and Ten, the championship, which First and Ten, if folks don't know, was a HBO original series from back in the day, one of the first HBO original series, if I remember correctly, about a fictional professional football team and its players, known for some of its crazy antics. It was definitely in that sitcom vein, for sure. But, yeah, that would be J.C. Quinn, who plays Boss Cooley. He's a right son of a bitch in this episode.
He is, yeah. And then we got Claude Earl Jones, who plays Captain Elias. Claude is still with us. Looks like his last acting credit on IMDb in 1997. In this episode, he plays the captain. He plays the poor man, Strother Martin.
Yes, indeed.
Who plays the captain in Cool Hand Luke, which there are some homages, some hat tips to Cool Hand Luke in this episode. And it, in particular, I really feel like Jean-Pierre, like he either got the note or he took the inspiration, like he the captain is dressed like the captain in Cool Hand Luke. Claude plays the captain, like I said, almost like a coy advance to Strother Martin's Bo and Luke. That's a deep one right there.
Dude, that's awesome.
I will never pass up the chance to I can't remember. Bo and Luke and Coy and Vance. I will Dukes never pass up a chance to do a Coy and Vance reference, but yeah.
Well, actually, you know, it's really funny that you... Oh, man, this is too fucking good. I couldn't make this up if I tried. But in addition to all of the other guest starring roles that he had on many TV shows, he guest starred as Sheriff Droopy Cathcart in The Dukes of Hazzard in an episode titled Cool Hands, Luke and Debo.
That just... Thank you for joining Fates Wide Will this week. We're just going to end the episode right now because you can't.
I couldn't make this up if I tried because get this, Bo and Luke are arrested in Osage County on false traffic charges and placed on the county's chain gang.
That is.
Oh, man.
That is awesome.
That's just priceless. The things you discover.
That's how we
like Dennis. Thank you for joining us this week on Fates Wide.
Yeah, and that's
we're not going to top that moment.
That's so. It right there. So there, yeah, there we go. And then everybody else, Don Sparks, who plays Jake Wiles. I figure he should get a mention. And yeah, because he played.
Yeah, and he's, you know, I think of obviously Scott Bakula aside of the cast, he's the one that seems to be working the most and most recently and consistently. He was in a few episodes of Mr. Robot, The Good Wife, you know, just a lot of stuff more recently, a handful of episodes of Law and Order, film, television, etc., with a career that goes back to 1974.
Oh, wow.
Actually. So he's been around quite a while and done a lot of, like I said, guest spots for the most part. Doesn't look like there's any, like, recurring roles or right series regulars or anything like that. Oh, I take that back, actually. On L.A. Law, he played a role called Russell Spitzer for 8 episodes. So so there was a kind of a recurring thing there. But
I got you there.
Yeah.
And in his character, I, you know, because this episode obviously had tips to Cool Hand Luke and the Defiant Ones. It's been years since I've seen In the Heat of the Night. Mm-hmm. The like the original, like Sidney Poitier, Rod Steiger, I think, pronounced his name right. Yeah, and the person who ends up being the murderer in that movie kind of looks like Jake in this episode.
Nice.
I don't know if that was intentional or not, but to me, like Jake is like a hat tip to In the Heat of the Night.
I love it.
Yeah. And not many other characters in this episode. Some background characters. Mark Kimball plays the mirror image. Chance Cole.
I'll give a quick shout out actually to Robert V. Barron, who plays the old convict, as he's called, because he does get a few speaking lines and kind of like featured, you know, shots, if you will. He played Abraham Lincoln in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. That's his IMDb photo.
That is his IMDb photo.
Or one of them, yeah.
You know, and it's interesting that, you know, drawing the parallels between films like Cool Hand Luke and The Defiant Ones, which are obviously homaged within the course of this episode, from the setup being, you know, ripped from the Defiant ones in a lot of ways, and then a lot of the stuff that happens back at the actual camp, you know, being straight out of Cool Hand Luke, and certainly, again, not in any sort of, like, plagiaristic way, but just kind of playing in that same sandbox. And then, of course, you mentioned In the Heat of the Night. One of the things that all three of these films have in common, as well as this episode, is sweat.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, those are some sweat-drenched movies. This is a sweat-drenched episode. Just worth pointing out that it was hot in the South back then. It was hot all mm-hmm. the time. It was just hot.
Yeah.
People were just sweating.
That is, yeah. And it's I've never seen the Defiant ones, but yes, Cool Hand Luke, sweat is almost its own character.
Yeah.
In the Heat of the Night. Now that I think about it, yeah, one of the first shots of In the Heat of the Night is like in this diner with Jake's parallel character, just like you just see a fan going back and forth and someone soaking under the cool air of that fan. Yeah. It's hot.
It's hot.
Hot. But that being said, should we dive back into the episode? And
yeah, let's go right ahead here. You know, I'm very interested because and we don't really do a whole lot of planning, surprise, surprise, on these. I've been watching the episodes and taking some notes separately. So I'm very interested to hear what you have to say, you know, as far as what you didn't like about the episode. Because, again, yeah, I do like it. I think it's... yeah.
So here's what. But so after they get recaptured and they get taken back to the camp, the prison, whatever you call it, and Jasper gets thrown in the hole, and then we cut to later. I can't remember if it was like at night or the next morning, but Sam is pushing the barrels back and forth, which is the parallel of Cool Hand Luke digging the ditch and filling the dirt, digging the ditch and filling the dirt. It's Sam's voiceover where he talks about hearing. Jasper howl all night because of his claustrophobia, being stuck in the hole, and Sam flat out acknowledges there is nothing that Sam can do for him. It all depends on Al doing stuff in the future to figure out when the next robbery is going to happen so they can get a tip, so they can get the real robber arrested instead of Jasper. Which, by the way, yeah. If you're listening to this episode, Cole, and haven't rewatched the episode, the whole point is that Jasper is in prison for these chain of robberies that have happened, and it turns out, in reality, it is Jake who is doing these robberies in blackface, and the robberies are continuing to go on. So the crux of the episode is Al being able to figure out when the next robbery is going to happen so they can have insider knowledge to prove that Jasper is not the robber.
Right.
And so what bugs me about the episode is that Sam can't really do anything. It's all Al back in the future working to figure this out. Sam has no agency. The episode is happening to Sam. And in fact, he makes things worse by telling Jasper what's going on. Because, like you pointed out before, Jasper hears Sam talking to Al. Sam, Al's his guardian angel. But then also Sam tells Jasper the plan of figuring out what's going on. And like Sam causes half the problems in this episode by bringing Jasper into it, and Jasper losing his temper and going off on Jake and other people.
Right, right. Which that when he does that, man, when he punches through the glass and then the car door, and then just starts slamming Jake's head into the steering wheel and. I can get that. It's strange because normally that sort of thing would bother me, but I think because of the circumstances of the episode, it doesn't bother me because there's a certain tension and you feel for Jasper in particular. So I think that there's a certain amount of empathy that the episode provokes, not only in Sam but by way of Sam in the audience, at least for me personally, that I could really get behind. So I don't disagree really with anything you just said. I just don't know that I would put that as a strike against the episode.
I just mean just otherwise, like the episode is so dark. Other words, like you get some good action in the first half or in the first quarter. You get some good quips between Sam and Al, but like you pointed out earlier, like the episode gets so dark after that, it's just kind of difficult to watch with not a whole lot uplifting to it.
Yeah, I mean, again, I would argue that you've got the scene of Jazz talking about what he wants to do after they escape, and then you've got the actual escape scene, which I think is very well done. And the thing that gets accomplished through the course of this episode that we don't get to see often, which is kind of nice, is you know, Jasper's thanking Al.
I do like that.
Which is really kind of cool. Interesting. Yeah, because again, I don't disagree with anything you said. Mm-hmm. I still like the episode. Not in spite of it, but maybe in some ways even because of those elements.
I mean,
it feels very different.
Yeah, I feel like if we were to see this episode made today, like we would, like if they just had some shots of like Al, like back in the future, like working with the tech, you know, who specifically works with Ziggy to dig this information up, you know, like all the procedurals now, like they have like the high tech person who's always in the computer room, right. and you know, and making quips and whatever, you know, back and forth with the main characters, you know, they have that character on NCIS New Orleans, and the other variations of NCIS. Like I would just, like if we were just back, like if we were just like showing that banter between Al and the tech working on Ziggy, like seeing that stuff, but it's all like we hear secondhand of what Al is doing back in the future to figure all this stuff out. Yeah. And that's what bugs me about it. And then there's also, we talked about like how Sam throwing out this knowledge messes with the time stream, and like four robberies get undone.
Right.
And it kind of,
and a person dies.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of changes, you know, deep fan wank, and we talked about the rules of time travel kind of change and go wobbly, timey-wimey with every episode. But, like, sure. To jump back to the Vietnam portion of Elite Back, Sam sleeps with Maggie to get her on the mission so that she can take photos on the mission and do a story so that in the future Al can pull that story to give that information to Sam. In this episode, Sam starts off, Al starts off talking about all these robberies that happened. But by the nature of Sam blabbing it in the past, he undoes that. Therefore, what robberies does Al have to discover?
Well, see, now it's interesting that you say that, because the you know, of course, the theory is, and has been, is that there's a certain, you know, outside of time nature to Project Quantum Leap, so that even though the effect that Sam is going to have, because it's the same, it's because what you just said about the leap back does not negate what happens in this episode. And the reason being is because if we know that Sam is going to get Maggie on the mission so that she can write the story, so that they can use the story in order to find the location. Okay. If that happened, there would be no need for Sam to do it. In which case, it might not happen because Sam would not be pushed into doing it. So the same is true in this episode, where because Sam does something which changes something so that those robberies never happen, that Al can never report on him, well, it still kind of has to exist for Project Quantum Leap and for Sam and Al, because if he never said anything about the four robberies, nothing would happen to stop the four robberies from existing. So the paradoxical nature of both of those elements is actually exactly the same. It's just done in a different way.
Fair enough. Touche. Touche.
But I do get what you're saying, because it is interesting that, and I think that this is just because of the way that television was produced at the time, that not necessarily as much attention may have been paid to that particular element of this episode as it was, say, in Elite Back or in other episodes where that has been a function or a part of the episode. Here, it's very throwaway. And you could argue that it was done in a nuanced manner or whatnot, whatever. That's fine. I appreciated it. I enjoyed it. It didn't bother me. But I think that today, if Quantum Leap was being made today or being rebooted, there would definitely be some rules, I think, and those rules would probably be touched on. And when those rules were broken, they would be done broken for a reason and whatnot.
Sure.
So I definitely see where you're coming from.
Got it. Now, I will tell you what I do like about the second part of the episode is I like the scene between Jake and Cooley. Like when it's revealed that Jake is the one doing the robberies, that he's doing it in blackface, and that him and Cooley are in cahoots with one another. What I like about that scene is that at this point in the series, you rarely get scenes where you show the characters outside of Sam and Al. Mm-hmm. Where at the first part of the series, you saw that all the time. And I like it, to me, when you have moments like this, it fits more of the anthology nature of the series.
Absolutely.
That it's set out to do, where you use Sam and Al as like a conduit to introduce these other characters. So I like that. And I also liked that the scene ends ambiguously.
Yep.
And you don't realize until later what happened to Jake.
Yes.
I like that.
I completely agree. It's interesting that you bring that up as far as seeing, you know, the characters kind of existing outside of Sam and Al. Immediately I go to Thou Shalt Not, which is honestly in a lot of ways become one of my favorite episodes of the series, oddly enough. You know, it's not an incredibly remarkable episode in many ways, but there's just something about it, you know, whether it's the cinematography, the direction, the script, the acting. And one of those things that's worth noting is that we do get quite a few scenes of the characters existing independently of Sam and Al within the context of that episode, which is something worth appreciating. There are certainly some moments that are, you know, like French scenes, if you will, where they start out with, you know, characters and then Sam comes in or something like that. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, you've got those moments where it is just between other characters, which I think is very cool. And so, yeah, I give that high marks as well, because it's a simple scene. It's not even necessarily like overly poignant or inventive, mm-hmm. or, you know, anything like that. It's basically a stock scene, if you will, mm-hmm. that you would see in any, you know, murder of the week mystery show or whatnot. But yeah, it's notable just because of the context of Quantum Leap, I think.
Yeah, and speaking of, one thing I did note, and this is not a mark for or against, but something that I did note, is that the music in this episode, it did kind of remind me of like the TV movie Murder of the Week TV movies. Mm-hmm. Like, even though we take place in the 50s, there was something about the music that felt a little bit more late 80s TV movie of the week.
So
during the action sequences,
a few things that I want to throw out there actually that don't necessarily have anything to do with what you just said specifically, but one thing, kudos to the production team for getting a quarter that was minted in the 1950s, because when they flip the quarter towards the beginning of the episode to decide mm-hmm. who's going to get thrown in the pit, whether it's Sam or Jazz, they do a close-up of the quarter to show that it's heads before
sure.
Boss Cooley says it's tails, and it says like 1950, you know, six or something like that on the quarter, which I was like, kudos, look at you.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think is worth noting, because the episode takes place in the 50s and because Jazz is, you know, of mixed heritage, as he puts it, both American Indian and African American. The episode written by a person of color, that the strain of racism, which I feel like could be easily played up because of the time and location, is not, and yet it's definitely there. And so kudos to the episode for, I think, portraying it in a very nuanced and realistic manner, as opposed to being so in your face with it, like
almost every other episode of Quantum Leap that involves race.
Yeah,
that's something like, it never occurred to me until after the second viewing, and just like about an hour before recording, like I was thinking about it, I was like, yeah, they we're gonna have an episode coming up in the fifth season where the episode does not involve race at all, but they still take an opportunity to use a racial slur against the characters, like as a throwaway line. I really do appreciate that they don't do that.
Yeah,
in this episode.
You know, it's fascinating. I'm really glad to have the conversation about it, because again, you're not really saying anything that I disagree with. But for whatever reason, you know, some of the things that you're saying that you might not have liked about the episode are things that either didn't bother me or that I actually did like about the episode. And I think the tone of the episode as it gets, you know, later on and things do start to get very dark, is very fitting for the, you know, that strain of desperation that runs throughout the course of the entire episode. you know, this wrongfully accused man is really at the end of his rope, has been mistreated and abused and a victim in multiple ways. And I think that it makes the payoff of their final escape mean even more. One thing, and I can't remember exactly where I read it. I don't know if it was on Al's Place or if it was the MacGyver Project. But in their reviews of the episode, or in the message boards, rather, comments, it was not the actual website or the web host saying this, but a comment was made about not buying the cockfight at the end between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And I completely disagreed with the comment, because their comment was basically like, you know, Jazz and Chance are supposed to be friends, and, you know, why would they fight each other? Why would Jazz, you know, say that he wants... And it's just sort of like... Well, A, I don't think that that's really been shown throughout the course of this episode that they're friends. Mm. I think that a lot of it has been out of necessity. I think that we've got plenty of evidence of Jazz, you know, like when he grabs Sam through the bars and is, you know, is choking him, when, mm-hmm. you know, some of the words exchanged between the two of them, like, this relationship is fairly tenuous at best. It's not, you know, I think that Jazz starts to sense a little bit of hope because of Al. And I it's that interesting thing, and the thing that makes that character, and again, I think Basil Wallace does a wonderful job with it, and it's written very well, of giving us a character who's fairly, well-formed and yet clearly at the end of his rope. And so he's willing to believe what Sam is telling him about Al, whereas most other people, and I think Sam senses that, which is why he's just sort of like, I'm just going to tell him that this is what we're banking on, because maybe he'll believe it, because it's all I've got to believe in right now. And so I like that aspect of it. And I like the, you know, the course that gets them ultimately to that cockfight. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this, it's interesting because you talked about Sam not having agency, and yet at the end of the episode, I feel like he displays more agency than any other character throughout the end of the episode by actually instigating the getaway and in fighting off, you know, Jazz for as long as he can until he tells him, like, all right, now we're going to make our move, you know, and he grabs like that little water snake.
Sure. Yeah. Water rock. Yeah. 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 That's a good point. And I feel like, yes, it's like his only thing, like he can just, all he can do is guide Jasper along through the things.
Right.
But yeah, because I was saying, like, what better person could have Sam leaped into in the vicinity where he could have actually done something?
Right.
He could have leaped into the captain. He could have leaped into the boss. That would have been interesting.
It would have been interesting, because I do feel like there are times when, you know, that, okay, actually, that's a really good point. Because as Chance, Sam does not have to really do any, like, as we've already talked about, he doesn't really have to do anything to pretend to be Chance.
Yeah.
He can just be Sam, basically.
Sure.
Whereas if he had leapt into the captain or Boss Cooley or one of the other cops or something like that, like, he would have had to play a part. And he would have probably had to do some morally and ethically questionable things in order to be convincing to his superiors or to whoever, you know, he surrounded himself with, which would have been very interesting. I don't disagree with that. Mm-hmm. It would have changed the nature of the episode for sure. But it also, I felt like, I think ultimately would have been an easy way out. So while it would have posed some interesting questions character-wise and some moral dilemmas for Sam throughout the course of the episode, by the end of it, it would have felt like a hollow victory, because it's like, well, he could have let him go at any time.
Fair point. Yeah. It would have been interesting to have Sam leap into a boss.
Yes, I agree.
That would have been, especially like the man with no eyes, you know, taking off of Cool Hand Luke. That would have been an interesting take. But yeah, anyway. So we get to the end of the episode, and then they escape during the fight, and they get tracked down, and then Boss Cooley... Basically, Al kills Boss Cooley.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
There's no other way. Al kills Boss Cooley. He distracts the dogs, and the dogs, boom.
And it's funny, because as I was rewatching the episode, I completely forgot that Boss Cooley died. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just sort of like, and the thing is, they kind of make light of
they
it.
They do? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because doesn't, like, Jasper say something, Al, like, you know, announces, like, he's dead, and Jasper has some line, like, better him than us. And then we just head off to the next morning.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because this is one of those elements of the episode that I feel like you could play the 24 game, where it's like, how does Jack Bauer get you know, from point A to point B in that amount of time or that sort of thing. Because, again, we don't really know where we are location-wise. I think Matt even posits in his book, or maybe it's in early production notes or something like that, where they mention Arkansas as well as being a possibility. So who knows where the hell they are. But anyway, they travel all night long. It's the morning. The sun is rising. We get this beautiful scene, you know, where they're on the road and they go their separate ways. And Jazz, you know, thanks Al, which is a really sweet moment. And Al and Sam, you know, have a really nice moment there together as well, kind of celebrating, you know, Jazz's freedom. And the, you know, the cool thing is that they do the wrap up, you know, that we get at the end of some episodes, which I really love. I think is an essential part of Quantum Leap, and I miss when it's not there for the most part. And the wrap up is really nice because it feels honest and genuine. In a way that Al's like, well, we can't be sure, but a guy, you know, fitting his description shows up, blah, 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 around here. And it's, I don't know, it was really, I really liked that. And I feel like for all the hell that we went through over the course of the episode, which we definitely did, it's a very satisfying, optimistic conclusion.
It is. It's almost too optimistic in that we kind of get this contradictory thing that Al says of, like, he disappears into the fabric of society. But 4 years later, someone spotting his description, it's like it's having it both ways, which I get it. It's an episode of feel-good TV in the early 90s. We want to make sure that we know. There would have been something cool about just like, he just kind of disappears into the fabric of society. We don't know. He could, right. He could live to, you know, to work in the forestry service, or he could die 5 minutes after going over the hill. We don't know.
Right.
But it is a very sweet moment at the end of running back and saying, you know, tell Al goodbye for me and he can hear you. And yes.
Yeah, I get that, but I don't know. I enjoyed it. I really did, and I enjoy that ending. I agree with Matt's assessment in his book. You know, Basil Wallace's performance is definitely a standout, but I would argue that they all are. I mean, I think J.C. Quinn is great as Boss Cooley. I think that, you know, he takes that role and you know, chews some scenery with it. And I just think overall, that it's a well done episode. I would certainly say that I'm not going to put it on any like top 10 lists more than likely. I mean, it may make a top 10 of season 4. I don't know. I haven't decided yet, but it's certainly not going to be like a top 10, you know, all time episode or anything like that. It's not going to be on the, you know, the marathon that I plan to watch. It's probably not going to be on a essential list that I give people that you have to watch this episode of Quantum Leap. But I think that it's a very good episode. Well, okay, it's a good episode. Almost very good. But it's a good episode. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to say this here. The acting is fine. Everything is great. Sam being in a prison, that is starting to become a trope. And to me, that's another thing. It's like, after you have Sam on death row...
Sure.
It's hard to top anything else with him in prison.
Well, and I think that I would argue that my argument to there would be that it, because it's not Sam that we're supposed to be worried about through the course of this episode necessarily, that it's Jazz, that because I get where you're coming from, but for me it's not about Sam.
I got it. I guess
this episode's not a, you know, I don't know.
To jump back to where I'm coming from is like to me part of my thing of Why is Sam here? Why did Sam leap into Chance and not somebody else? And later on in the series, the idea is going to be thrown out that all of Sam's leaping is a sabbatical before his real mission. So if Sam leaped into Chance to learn some lesson, to learn something, maybe it's about, I don't know, being incarcerated or something of that line. And from that point of view, it's hard to top being on death row.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess also argue that perseverance is a big part of this one too. That not that there aren't other episodes where he has to persevere in order to get to, you know, accomplishing his mission, but I think that what he goes through over the course of this leap, ups the stakes a bit.
Sure.
Even to the point where there's kind of almost the threat of having to wait 8 months. You know, Ziggy throws that out there at one point, and it's like, well, in 8 months, you know, you could maybe get this done. And it's like, 8 months? Mm-hmm. We don't have 8 months.
Now,
and
I will say, that would have been a twist.
Right. Right.
If it next comes 8 months, and then we just got like a little montage, and then we come to 8 months later.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting.
We've got a bearded Sam waiting for his chance to like break out. No, that is something that I would have absolutely loved to have seen a couple of times throughout the course of Quantum Leap, or leaps that lasted, you know, more than a couple of days or whatnot. I mean, I think we get a couple that last maybe like a week or two. But even then they're sketchy on that. Most of the thrust of the action from like the time leap in to mission accomplished happens is usually like, you know, 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. But I think that, yeah, having a leap that would have lasted, you know, 6 months or a year, man, that would have been awesome. Yeah. It's something that, you know, I bring up every once in a while. I bring up Doctor Who, and I think it's one of the things that Doctor Who has toyed with more and more in the new series. And it's something that they did a lot in the novels in the 90s, where, you know, the Doctor and his companions would be in a location for an extended period of time. And I thought that was always a really cool thing to play with. But yeah, I think... for me, the strength of the episode as far as the lesson for Sam definitely has to do with that element of perseverance and also believing in someone else. You know, he doesn't... I think, obviously, he's got the benefit of Al telling him that Ziggy says it's 98% that Jazz didn't do this.
Sure.
But the way that he cares for... Jazz, and the way that he, you know, he stands with Jazz in spite of everything that gets thrown up against them, and he tries to protect him, and he tries to, I don't know that it's natural for Sam at this point, I feel like, but I still think that, I'm really glad you brought that up. It's something I wish that maybe we had focused on a little bit earlier in the podcast with, you know, but at risk of spoilers and whatnot, we just didn't want to do it. But, to think about what has Sam been learning over the course of these leagues,
sure.
what has brought him, you know, thus far.
No, you're saying like about him being nurturing and believing Jasper. This is a note that I took early in the episode that I forgot. There's a line early on where like they're still on the run and Jasper makes some comment about he's not meant to be cooped up. He's meant to be free. And you know, he's not meant to be cooped up, and Sam has the line, "That's what happens when you break the law."
Yeah.
And he just assumes that Jasper is guilty. Right. Or even like in an earlier conversation, when his first conversation with Al, he throws out the idea that Chance may be innocent of whatever he's in prison for, but mm-hmm. he automatically makes the assumption that Jasper must be guilty.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, I wrote that. I was like, we got a judgy Sam. Like that, because I feel like in another episode, like Sam would have taken the thing as like, no, if I am here in this moment, this must mean Jasper is innocent, because why else would I be here? Right. Anyway, so that my issues are with the plotting of the episode. Like, acting is nice. My issues with the plotting, but that being said, it occurred to me like, what's the name of the writer of this episode? You got the book.
Harris Qualls.
Yeah. Other than Deborah Pratt, how many people of color have we had as writers on episodes of the show?
I believe we've had at least one other. I know we've had a couple of directors. Mm-hmm. But I believe we had one other female person of color who had written an episode, but now it's not coming to mind.
Okay.
Which one it was. Oh, I think it was Dreams, actually. Anita Addison.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. So even more recent. But yeah, no, I agree. Over the course, I mean, we're talking about a show that ran for almost 100 episodes, and as far as comes to mind right off, we've had three people of color have written for the episode, written for Quantum Leap. So yeah.
So
yeah.
For what that is worth.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think I didn't really think about it until I just thought about it just now. We have maybe one of the most appropriate reprieves that Sam gets leaping from one situation to another.
Oh my God.
At least at first, at least at first glance.
Oh, F.
Yeah. So he leaps into red satin sheets. And this is one of the rare moments where we get Sam monologuing during the teaser for the next episode. You know, he's like, yeah, you know, he's left in some precarious situations. This is one of those times, like, and this was thrown out in another Quantum Leap group on Facebook the other day. Like, does Sam remember where he just came from each one? And right. I really wish, like, this is one time I, you know, the way they air episodes out of order, whether they had a plan or whatnot, like, I really wish they would have nailed it more. Like, in this particular time, if they would have said, Sam knows exactly where he just came from. He just came from a prison chain gang, and now he lands in a nice, cushy bed. I wish they would have driven that point home.
Right.
But yeah, he is not alone in bed.
No, he's not. No, he's not. And we're going to talk all about it in the plays The Thing. Which will be fun for you and I to talk about.
Yes, with the theaters. Yeah, yes.
Hey, here's something to titillate or not our audience with until next week. Dennis, have you ever appeared nude on stage?
I have. Have you?
I have.
We will tell those stories. We will not share pictures. And I will share this story next week. There may be video out there of me having appeared nude on stage, which I did not know about until after the fact.
Well, but I may have actually appeared nude in a short film, so it's out there. It was a television pilot that I did. So
I got you. Like I said, we can tell these stories next week. I will throw out there that even though more people will probably ultimately see the short film, it is a very different thing appearing nude on stage in front of live people.
Yes.
Than it is in a short film or any kind of film. Is. But we will share those stories next week
and
do a little, give Daniel Roebuck a little love.
That's
Daniel
right.
Roebuck is the son. He's he's one of my favorite character actors. He's in the
Andy Griffith Show, Andy, Lost.
Yeah, The Fugitive. He was in both right. that one, the sequel, U.S. Marshals. And did you watch Lost?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he was Arts.
Yeah, I just said Lost.
Oh yeah. That's right. Arts. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'll never forget that on Matlock. I said Andy Griffith Show. I meant Matlock. I'm sorry. On Matlock, he plays a younger lawyer in, like, the last couple of seasons. But there are also a couple of episodes that take place in, like, the 50s and 60s when Matlock was first starting out as a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And he plays a young Ben Matlock in those episodes.
Oh, my God.
Which I always thought was just fantastic.
I did not know that, but I can totally see that.
Yeah.
So tune in next week for our Matlock podcast. No.
Man, I'll tell you what, if there's a way to get the septuagenarian crowd into listening to podcasts, that's it.
That would be the one.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening and joining us here at Fate's Wide Wheel. We've enjoyed talking about Unchained, and we'll do the plays The Thing next week. We'll also continue asking some questions, interacting, and getting your feedback and comments about Quantum Leap and celebrating the 30th anniversary with that fan interaction. We've been enjoying it, you know, in lacking any kind of official convention or official page or official anything with the 30th anniversary. We just want to do our part to make sure that we're talking about it and aware of it and celebrating the fact that the show that we know and love has been 30 years since it premiered. Yeah. So, Dennis, you ready to leap out of here?
Leap out of here. Have a good week, everybody.
Right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed what you've heard or have any questions or comments, don't be shy. Reach out to us online at fwwquantumleappod.com or Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at Fate's Wide Wheel. And remember to hit the subscribe button and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you may be listening. Until next time.
and time. I want to stay, I want to go. You see my face, but it's not mine. But you can see, you'll never know. How can we meet if I